Hello and welcome to this episode of the Jambase Podcast, which is proudly part of the Osiris Podcast Network. I'm Andy Kahn, and co-hosting with me today is Scott Bernstein. Hey, Scotty B.
How's it going, AK? Hey, everybody.
This episode is sponsored by SiriusXM. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment, and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood, where you go to get news from every source, where you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio, in addition to Jam On, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many more. Where you can listen to top comedy channels such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix's Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN, and more, to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside of the car, on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just a dollar. Visit SiriusXM.com/Jambase to see offer details and to subscribe and start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. All right, let's get to this episode rolling. First up, in just a second, Scotty and I will deliver the rundown of recent news in the music world. Then we'll hear my Art of the Setlist interview with Paul Hoffman and Anders Beck of Green Sky Bluegrass. After that is Scotty's Art of the Sit-In interview with Freakbass. Let's get started with the rundown.
Unfortunately, we're starting with sad news. The passing of legendary New Orleans musician Art Neville, who died at the age of 81. Art was the co-founding keyboardist for the pioneering funk band The Meters. Known as Papa Funk, Neville's first taste of success came when he was just 17 years old, as he provided the lead vocal on the Hawkettes' Mardi Gras Mambo and helped score his high school band a hit. Art, George Porter Jr., Leo Nocentelli, and Zigaboo Modalist formed The Meters in the late 1960s. The influential band recorded such funk classics as Sissy Strut, Fire on the Bayou, Hey Pocky Away, and many others. Meters also served as the backing band for Professor Longhair, Dr. John, and Robert Palmer. In 1978, after the Meters parted ways, Art formed the Neville Brothers with his siblings Cyril, Aaron, and Charles Neville. Neville Brothers toured with some of the greatest live acts of all time, including the Rolling Stones, the Grateful Dead, and Santana. Art went on to reunite with the members of the Meters in various incarnations over the years. The longest-running group of those was the Funky Meters. The original lineup of the Meters got together for a handful of shows in the 2010s, including an appearance aboard Jam Cruise 15 in 2017 to celebrate their 50th anniversary that I had the pleasure of attending. And while both sets that the original Meters played aboard the boat were just incredible and so special, it was pretty clear that Art wasn't in good health. And he hadn't performed publicly since right around that time. And he didn't take part either in performing or attending at a ceremony last year in which the Meters were honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Recording Academy. Condolences from all of us at Jambase to Art's family, friends, and bandmates.
Indeed. Rest in peace, Art, and thanks for all the funky music. You know, we like to say go see live music at Jambase, and there's been a wave of tour date, particularly fall tour, announcements in recent weeks. Be sure to head over to jambase.com for full details on all the upcoming tours that have been confirmed. I'm going to tick through some of the bands that have announced shows since our last episode. We had Ween detailing their upcoming Halloween run of shows, and Bela Fleck and the Flecktones have extended their 30th anniversary tour into next year. The Mo Side Project, Ha Ha the Moose, announced their first headlining concert since 2016. And then we had tour dates announcements from Bob Weir and Wolf Brothers, Government Mule, Humphreys McGee, Keller Williams, the Avett Brothers, the Raconteurs, Jennifer Hartswick and Nick Casarino, Fruition, Corey Wong, Circles Around the Sun, who also have an EP with Joe Russo coming out, Marco Benevento, Todd Snyder, Pink Talking Fish, Blind Boys of Alabama, J.J. Gray's going solo for a Front Porch Sessions tour, the Shook Twins, Andy Frasco and the UN, Spafford, Delicate Steve, Shovels and Rope, Jonathan Wilson, Casey Musgraves, and DJ Williams shots fired. And Phish keyboardist Paige McConnell also announced the first Vida Blue tour dates since 2004. Scotty B, what else can you tell us about Vida Blue?
Well, not only is Paige taking Vida Blue on the road for three shows in September, but the band will also be releasing a new album entitled Crossing Lines that month, too. Now, we learned that Vida Blue, which is the basic trio of Paige, Dead & Company bassist Oteil Burbridge, Funky Meters drummer Russell Batiste, have added a new member, and that's guitarist Adam Zimmern. And the rest of the Spam All-Stars also contributed to the album. But just for the tour, it appears it's going to be the quartet of Oteil, Paige, Russell, and Adam. Zimmern previously worked with Vida Blue as a member of the Spam All-Stars and was also part of McConnell's 2007 touring band. Vida Blue released their self-titled debut album in 2002, and the original trio supported that original LP with tours in 2002 and 2003. Paige expanded the lineup with the addition of the Spam All-Stars for their most recent album, which is 16 years ago, 2003's The Illustrated Band. The 8-track forthcoming album, Crossing Lines, was recorded in Miami and produced by Paige. It features the lead single, Analog Delay, which we'll hear a bit of right now.
Right. Well, I can't wait to hear the rest of that record and all the recordings of the shows. And that's it for the rundown as well. So now here's my Art of the Setlist chat with Paul and Anders of Green Sky Bluegrass.
It's proven hard to let go. I didn't think it'd be different, you know. But I want all that's left before you take a breath. A little bit of courage for the road. Being tied to you, I guess it gives me something to get through. But then when you're empty, there's nothing left for me. It's the same ending we return to.
I am Andy. I'm here at High Sierra Music Festival with Paul and Anders from Green Sky Bluegrass. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Hell yeah.
So that's Paul.
That's Paul.
That's me.
And that's Anders.
I'm Anders. Hello.
All right, guys. So we are talking the art of the set list.
I'm the handsome one.
That's why we're doing it on audio.
Okay, good.
So, we're talking part of the set list. And so let's start with what's just the basic process for how Green Sky Bluegrass comes up with a set list before going out on stage.
Sometimes it feels more like the battle of the set list than the art of the set list.
Okay.
This but is true.
In a very diplomatic way, there are three of us that write the set so that we can... not have a tie on
okay.
opinions, so to speak.
Yeah, right?
And so that no one can ever possibly.
So we do it, the three of us, Dave, myself, and Anders do it.
Okay. That's Dave Bruza, the...
Dave Bruza, the guitar player, yeah.
Sorry, the guitar player.
We usually do it via text, even if we're sitting in the same room, so we can all see it. So we have a thread that's all the set list for probably a couple years now. We named it after the bar we used to hang out at in Denver called The One Up.
Yep.
Cool.
And there's a little ghost,
ghost emoji.
There's a ghost emoji. One up ghost emoji is the name of the thread.
It's good.
Hopefully people aren't going to like hack this.
I bet you that's pretty cool to see.
I've never looked.
Yeah.
So it's like, scroll back.
No, actually, it's a pain in the ass to see for me. I know what you're saying. I bet it is.
Yeah,
but.
So, yeah. And sometimes it can be pretty challenging. We try to subscribe to this theory of every show is different and playing stuff.
Right.
In different orders or different things in different the same cities we played in last time. So often we're checking on like what did we play last time we played High Sierra or last time we were in California. And
okay.
What did we play last weekend or you know yeah. if we were playing on tour and we were playing five shows a week, what did we play last night?
We subscribed to, so there's kind of this. A basic model like that where it's like essentially subscribing to the jam band method for what it's worth.
Right.
You can't play anything you played the last two nights.
Okay.
You can't play anything you played in that city the last time you're in that city.
Well, some things you can.
I mean, but you know, overall. Right.
See, there's these rules. That's why, is this an art or like a battle?
There
or like
you go.
It's a game
of chess. That's the art of it,
it's
right?
a formula.
Yeah.
It's a formula, but it's a formula for interest to be interesting. You know, it's a formula for fans.
So take me through. Let's go through today. You're gonna play the headlining set tonight. What? So you, have you started this text exchange yet for today?
I have submitted an entire set list, which is yet to be commented on by either party.
Oh wow!
I got a lot of rest last night, and I am on. I'm focused.
So if there's no comments, does that just mean you win?
No, there's going to be comments.
There's going to be comments, I'm sure. Yeah. Or if the other guys don't feel like doing it, they'll just be like, yep, looks good. Not having to do it sometimes is a great
treat.
So what are like some
I've
of
never
the...
Sometimes I'll write an entire set and send it to them, but I've never had the experience of everybody just never commenting. That's amazing. Wonder what that feels like, Paul.
Oh, it feels great, man.
I would never know, Paul. That being said... It's almost like a system of checks and balances, you know. Like, I'll write a set that's to something, you know. Or like,
well, tell me something. What is something?
Too jammy, but anybody could do this. I'm not saying me.
Yeah, no, right. Totally. I'm curious. You know, like, what are the conditions of a set list that you try to maneuver?
Try to
around?
Keep certain songs away from each other that can be kind of similar, or like we have two singers, so we balance the singing.
Sure.
In a way that's appropriate, and you know, there's like songs that have certain effects or something that happens, like certain sonic events that could be kind of similar, so we keep those away or do those different nights.
Yeah.
We also have people in the band that play with capos who take forever to tune on banjo. So we...
People on banjo?
I mean, it could be anybody.
They'll never listen to this.
Hey, Bont. Hey, Bont. Can you hear me?
Hey, Bont. Tune up. Are you ready to go? No, but really.
He'll never listen.
So sometimes that'll sometimes that'll
throw
mean
all under the
he's gonna see the art of the cells and be like, oh, I'm
out. Sometimes it'll mean that for that reason, for capo position or tuning, that certain songs go well next to each other.
Okay.
So if someone was really trying to nerd out on like notice that we have trends, like we definitely do because there are logistical things that make Can't Stop Now and In Control go well together.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's sort of a play on words there. In Control, Can't Stop Now.
Yeah.
See what I did? See that?
I mean, I heard it, but
you heard it.
It wasn't that. Yeah. I don't see a particular. I don't see that particular. So that's a bluegrass thing, a bluegrass instrument kind of thing.
Right.
You know, like, it's just based upon the way that those acoustic instruments work. Uh-huh. You know, capos, you know, it's a banjo sonically sounds better. Mm-hmm. If there's a capo up in B, and if you're playing in B that way, and that's the way kind of bluegrass gets that sound. So we have some, you know, a little, some restrictions that other bands don't because of that
exactly,
kind of thing,
yeah,
you know?
Sure.
So our, there are more trends than, like, say, Fish or something, you know, like where anything can go next to each other. But they, everybody has their own trends too, you know? We have gone through phases where, the set, it was, so we, I mean, wing it is probably the wrong word, but mm-hmm. we're like, we got this, let's just go play.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like,
but
how often does it happen that you go without much planned?
Ever since Lincoln,
not very often anymore.
Ever since Lincoln started getting good, our light guy, Andrew Lincoln.
Okay.
He really appreciates knowing what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And knowing what the show's going to look like. So that's that. Therefore, because of that, it's written out more mm-hmm. often, and also because we've got a lot more fans that you know go to multiple shows and travel to see us and things like that. So we can't if we just wing it in Minneapolis,
Shout out Minneapolis.
What up? Twin Cities. The next night in Milwaukee.
There you go.
We would run ourselves into problems because
we played those
four songs last time we were there.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is like the bigger. You know, the bigger jam songs we try and not repeat.
Right.
You know, so, like songs, it's not as big of a deal. Because, like, when I said that rule, Paul said, well, not, except sometimes, that thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But in general, it's like the big, you know, the 20-minute songs as opposed to the 3-minute songs.
Spread the love around a little bit that way.
Yeah. But we occasionally wing it, and then occasionally we'll change it on stage, too.
So that was the other thing I was going to ask about. How does that happen?
Well, Paul says,
"Yeah, then
let's
I'll
do this instead.
Let's do this instead." I might not think I'm going to remember the words. Sometimes you just don't make good decisions when writing the set list either.
Sure.
Then halfway through it, I'm like, oh, this is just like...
Set list remorse.
Set list remorse is what we call it.
Oh, yeah?
I was thinking, too, that the most important part really is that we just play what we want to play. That's the biggest part of the art. And like what makes a good show. So there'll be times where it's like, oh, we've done this a lot, this tour, and it's like, but we want to play it, so... We will.
That's true.
If it feels good, do it.
I think that's
what makes the best set list is one that we want to play.
Yeah, that's a really good point that we're with all these rules and all this weird stuff that we're talking about that mm-hmm. that makes these definitions of how it has to be.
Like
it's not that bad.
Okay,
I'm gonna make it sound terrible. It's not that bad. Yeah, like
it's still okay to have Tom Hamilton on Breadbox again because it is a blast.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think we've done it 3 times. Like we'll do that a lot too. Like we'll have guests and like every time try and have them mm-hmm. on a different song. And more so recently, like when we were out with the Little Smokies for a whole run, I was like, why do we do that? Like we give this guy the opportunity to learn one of our songs, come up there and have a go at it, and then 2 nights later we make him learn 8 more, and then 2 nights later 8 more or whatever, and then it's like, why don't we
just
give him a second shot on the one he already knows, and like maybe it could be even cooler.
Yeah, right.
Because of jam bands, damn it.
I know.
I mean, blame me. We're both jam band fans.
Right,
have been
right.
for a long time, but it's like, that's the reason.
It is.
It's all Fish's fault.
Well, yeah. You can always go back to blaming Fish, right?
Yeah, well, it's the set list. Halloween being a pain in the ass, that's their fault.
So when you have a big show like Halloween or New Year's, how far in advance to planning a set list does that
not
happen?
Nearly far enough. Yeah, Halloween is always tricky. New Year's is too. There's like a lot of pressure for the timeline on New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
That's and we always have a conversation about those big holiday shows too, where it's like, do people really want to come see a show on Halloween or New Year's and like hear a bunch of music that they've never heard us play? It's like, is that really cooler than just like a great show?
That's interesting.
And I tend to think that probably a great show is better. Or, like, I don't know if people, when you mix the holiday in and you're dressed up and, like, really tipping them back, it requires a different kind of attention span to, like, listen to a band you like play a bunch of music you've never heard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like, more listener responsibility. And I don't know that that's what really people are looking for at our
show. That's a good point.
I think, I agree, but I think the reason that New Year's and Halloween particularly are get that way is because there's these themes that are already built into the holiday, you know.
Right,
it's like
there are
songs that work well on New Year's. You just gotta figure out which ones and remember that you played Midnight Hour 3 years ago, so you can't do it this year, and you know, like
Well, and along along those lines, you guys also do your casual Wednesdays.
Mm, yeah.
How do you decide?
That does not go on the set list.
That's
a feel. That's a moment.
That's just in the feel.
Yeah. In the moment.
So do you? But
usually on Wednesday.
But is it once you're on stage or is it before you go? Like, are you feeling it before you go on stage and you're like, we're gonna go get loose?
How long did we do? Did we do a whole year, year and a half?
We did many years.
We recently stopped kind of doing it every time.
Yeah.
Because we didn't do it. We did a lot of stuff that's so stupid.
We didn't do Casual Wednesday for the first time on a Wednesday
this year,
and boy, were people pissed.
Well, that's like showing up to a New Year's show and not doing the countdown. Oh, yeah.
That's right? Exactly what it's like, right, Paul?
Yes.
Casual Wednesday was just an accident, and it was a joyous accident for a
while.
We
are committed. Even if the commitment is to something stupid, that's what that song means to the audience.
Go all in.
They're like, man, they are really committed to making fools of themselves.
Yeah, these guys are idiots.
For years. Yeah. Every Wednesday.
However, we've also...
At least you're consistent.
Yeah. But it's also worked in our favor on some level. This tomfoolery and fun that we have. People somehow got excited about it too. It's like,
yeah.
What is the once every 2 years at the end of winter? What do we do? The casual Wednesday and
the dead set thing.
Yeah,
you did a dead set.
We did it twice.
We did it twice at the end of the last casual Wednesday of the year or something.
I don't know why. The first time we did it was because that club was really dumpy.
Yeah.
Okay. And fans were on tour, and we felt like. This thing happens when you're in music. They skipped it too, so we were doing a hard lesson. But
this
weird thing happens, and when you're like playing a show, if the like weather gets bad or the club isn't cool, like when the conditions get harder and worse, you have to play better.
Sure.
So you like and reward people for like getting through it. Mm-hmm. So we were playing this club that was kind of small, and people were skipping it. And PA kind of sucked.
They stole weed from Paul. Yeah.
Instead of a Dark Side of the Moon cover,
I went with a casual Wednesday dead set. So
yeah. And then it happened again.
And then we did it again, but we waited a really long time so people would come for it all the time. And the second time was in a bank. That was a really cool.
That place was cool.
Kind of cool building.
Yeah, and you know it could happen. It could happen any given Wednesday. I think is the important part. See you there.
Well, see, that's it now. Now that it's not so consistent, it becomes that sought-after thing. It becomes...
It's jam bands, man.
That's special...
It's like an Easter egg hunt.
Yeah, the special show that you're always in search of.
Good evening. Today, my friends, is Wednesday. Wednesday is important to us because we believe in casual Wednesday. And a lot of people ask me often, they say, what is casual Wednesday? What does it mean? What is the overarching importance of casual Wednesday? And, I could give a really long-winded answer, perhaps. But the basis of Casual Wednesday is one word, my friends. Fun. Fun, that is the word. Fun. Okay?
Yeah, I think it bears repeating what Paul was talking about. Like, the fact that, the best sets are the ones when we're like, yeah, let's play that. And there's no rules.
Yeah.
And we can break our own rules anytime we want. Also, it's a good thing to remember. There are rules.
Yeah.
And we can break them.
It's your art of the set list.
Yeah, it's our art of the set list. But it's even when we're in the depths of tour and trying to figure out what it is we should play on that given night, which honestly is sometimes up to like 5 minutes before we go on stage.
It can be very challenging.
That's what we haven't actually gotten around to. So how does it get finalized then?
Eventually, we just all prove it. Timed. Sometimes we run out of time.
Time, yeah.
We try to have it done before sound checks so we can run stuff, but rarely do we pull it off.
Rarely that happens, yeah. And
we have a kind of a large catalog of music, too. I think I remember one time counting after Camp Green Sky this year or last year or something that we had played 96 different songs in 3 days or something like that.
Wow. That's impressive.
So sometimes, like you said about winging it on, we were talking about winging it on stage. Like, I actually have to look at our albums a lot. I have to look at a piece of a list sometimes because I forget about songs for like weeks.
Totally.
Yeah. And then suddenly it comes up in conversation. And I'm like, oh shit, I've been forgetting to put that on the set list for like weeks.
For 2 months.
Wow. Also, when did we play that?
And then it's a bust out and we write about it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, that's the best part.
Man, they really held that song back. Yeah.
That's we did it for you. Nope, we forgot about it.
No, we just forgot about it.
It's... Wow, it's a lot of songs also.
Yeah, I think our running catalog is even... It's like 200 maybe even. I don't even know.
It's very impressive.
It's a lot.
And growing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just put out the new album this year.
Still learning new songs all the time.
Yeah, I think... And I think when you get to that point, honestly, something that is new for us as we're getting... As there's more material... And we're getting older. You forget that you have to rehearse those songs. Like, you know, it's like
you can't just call them on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, to play them, you know, for Paul to remember the lyrics and for everybody to remember their specific parts, and like, you know, you got to check them out ahead of time a little bit.
Yeah. So one thing I want to finish with this, and it's your recent shows. You guys covered some Yonder Mountain String Band songs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. For Jeff Austin, condolences for that loss.
Yeah.
What I want to know is how did you guys decide on those songs?
Well, the No Expectations is a cover, but Jeff has a real kind of signature delivery of it. The other two are just Jeff tunes that seem to like kind of embody his spirit. Mm-hmm. I spent kind of a lot of time trying to really get into the Jeff Austin mood.
Yeah.
The one night we played in Missoula, I thought something really magical happened where we were really harnessing the showmanship of Jeff on stage, and I was like trying to psych myself up to get into singing. Which one was that?
Dawn's Delight.
And then one thing led to another, and we just got so weird. And I really after that show, I really felt like Jeff Austin was alive and well on stage with us. At least his spirit.
That's beautiful.
It's part of us.
I think it's terrific what you guys have been doing. Like, such beautiful tributes.
I think it felt really powerful too. Like the seeing the audience and people, you know, it felt like it was our, our duty, but also
it's what we can do.
Yeah,
it's like what we can do for the people that, because you know, it's true that most of our fans got into Green Sky, and not necessarily through, but. They were all Yonder fans first because Yonder is our big brothers.
No doubt.
And all the Yonder fans got into Yonder because of Salmon, because Salmon's their big brother. You know,
exactly,
it's like whether there's any path paved or not, it's just like
it's quite a community and a family with these bands.
We've had a hell of a week. Probably a lot of us had a hell of a week. You know, music is a pretty healing thing, and I think that's probably the. It's the most important thing we can all take away from. We lost a dear brother of ours this past week here, and our friend Jeff taught us a lot about a lot of things, and he liked Green Sky before pretty much anybody else did, I suppose, almost, and he really enjoyed. He let us open for them a bunch of times, and he was our brother, and hell, he taught us about Red Iguana. I mean, damn, that's some deep shit right there.
Thanks, Jim.
But, you know, I guess where I started with this is, you know, music is important, and music can heal and get you through the hard times and the good times and all that stuff. And, you know, for us, playing music has been really healing for the last week, and I hope that's been that way for you as well. We'll send this one out to our buddy Jeff, everybody, okay?
Yeah, I think with those songs too is, I mean, Jeff's a hell of a singer, mm-hmm. you know, and so that's some of the songs he sings really, really high, and nobody in our band can do that,
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
And you know, that's not a diss on anybody; it's just reality,
just
right?
How good he is.
And
dude.
Then, and it's and some of those songs are pretty intense, you know.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
You know, when someone is not around anymore, some of those lyrics that you would have to sing are pretty tough
to
swallow.
Yeah, no doubt. I've been listening to so much of his music lately, and so many of the lyrics have made me stop and think. You know,
and that's tough. And so there's some songs you're just listening to, you're like, nope, that's out, man. Yeah. We're not ready for that. Nobody's ready for that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to sing that right now, because that'll wreck you, you know? And I think that, you know, that's the cool thing about music in general, is that as things change in people's lives, the same music can mean different things to that person, you know, and that's why, I mean, one of the reasons that I've joined this band is because Paul and Dave write really good songs, mm-hmm. and that's lyrics and songs. That's a big deal to me, and you know, but I've always been, I also like fish, and you know, Reba dipped a bottle for the taste of her creation and knew that what she made would be the finest nation. Okay, cool.
Gold.
Yeah, you know, I know, but are we saying lyrical content? Lyrical content. Oh man, that's deep.
It's so creepy.
You know
it
what I'm
is,
saying?
Though, it is.
I know.
It's
I know.
Kind.
I'm just saying.
Kind of deep. I know what you're saying for sure, man. I know for sure. I grew up with fish too, and it was like it took a while to come around for some of that. For
right.
Sure.
So when anyway, I forgot what I was saying. Anyway, lyrics.
Sup,
cool.
Trey?
The power of music, right?
Power of music. You know, it's all the whole thing is. Oh, the way that you can evolve, your relationship to a song can evolve and mean something different to you. But that song didn't change, your life did, and that's a good song if it moves with you, you know.
Amen.
And I think Jeff left a lot of those songs.
No doubt.
And Paul does too, and Dave does too.
Awesome, thank you guys. This has been great.
Yeah, man.
Best
thank
of
you.
Luck along the
thank
way.
You.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
And good luck with the art of the set list.
Oh, God.
Back to work.
back to the battle.
Oh, you have to remind
check
us.
Check your text, bro.
Gonna take my time before I pick the next way I'm gonna run to. Gonna take my time before I find the next heart I'll give my soul to. But if time runs out, I'm sure I'll find a way to keep on going, keep on going, keep on going.
This episode is sponsored by SiriusXM. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated musical channels designed to fit every mood, where you get news from every source, where you get to listen to the newly launched Fish Radio in addition to Jam On, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many more, where you can listen to top comedy channels such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix is a Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN and more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just $1. Visit SiriusXM.com/Jambase to see offer details and to subscribe. And start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. Now here's my The Art of the Sit-In chat with Freakbase. Hello and welcome back to the Jambase podcast. My name is Scott Bernstein and today I'm at Jambase's New York City headquarters for the Art of the Sit-In. with Freak Bass. Freak Bass, thank you for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Yeah, I'm kind of living off the high. We just kind of got in a couple hours ago, so we're feeling good right now. It's good.
And home is Cincinnati?
Cincinnati, Ohio, yeah. Home of the Cincinnati Reds, as we were talking about before we went on air, yeah.
Exactly. And on my way here, I saw a DeLorean. I haven't seen an actual DeLorean in person in a while. Of course, that's for most familiar with Back to the Future, and I thought it was fitting coming to see you. And Back to the Future kind of strikes me as your vibe. I mean, you are known for the funk and come from Ohio. Both Dayton and Cincinnati are very instrumental in the funk, but yet you bring it to the future and this futuristic tip to it. So I thought it was perfect to see that car.
That analogy. I was like, what? I'm trying to figure. I'm trying to follow you down this road, right? Well, I guess you could say, well, where we're going, we don't need roads, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well played. Yeah. Well played.
But it's. You know, I think with you know, we'll get into this as we go on, but like with funk especially, I think we're finally at the point where for so long with funk, it was kind of like, oh yeah, you play that music that was real big in the 70s and the 80s, you know? And now with, you know, obviously bands like Lettuce, Wolfpack, you know, being the top of the game or that type of thing, and you know, just the scene that we were in general, it's like funk is almost as broad of a world as saying rock and roll anymore. Yeah. You know, it's really, really broadened its horizons a lot, and people understand it's like it's a legitimate, just like jazz, rock, country, whatever. It's its own thing, and it's really good to see that.
And it's progressing in great ways. It's not like these bands that you just mentioned or Turquoise are just playing 70s riffs that that Bootsy played.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really taking it in a new direction.
That's exactly
it. It's beautiful.
And it still always comes down to, I think, ultimately about the song. You know, the acts that are timeless that we refer to, whether it be the Bootsies or Sly and the Family Stone or Stevie Wonder, they were funky grooves and all that kind of stuff, but the songwriting, you know, was just amazing. And that's where even George Clinton, you know, even like with the craziness of his whole thing, it was still like those songs are just so strong. And I think that's ultimately where, you know, what's made it more timeless.
Yeah. Absolutely. And speaking of Back to the Future, you have a new album, All the Way This, All the Way That, and it's being put out through Color Red. Can you talk about how you decided to go the Color Red route?
Yeah, I'm so excited about this album. And you know, every artist says that about every album they do, but this is something really, really special I think we have. So I was doing some dates with Alan Evans, you know, from Soul Alive. And we were actually doing some dates with Joe Marcinek, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And he'd hired Joe, for those that don't know, and we'll kind of, this will segue nice into the Art of the Sit-In in a little bit. But Joe has kind of his shtick is he'll hire, kind of put super groups together, you know, for each one of his little tours or runs. So he did a run where he had Alan on drums and myself on bass. And so Alan and I really connected, especially on the funk stuff. He's a huge funk fan, obviously. And I told him we were just kind of getting ready to start this new album, and he said, man, you should give Eddie Roberts a call. He's got this new label, and it seems like the thing to do. So I'd seen Eddie at a couple shows before, a couple festivals, but didn't really know him that well. And shot him an email, and he got right back to me within like a couple hours, and he said, you know, and then we just started talking, and he kind of told me their whole philosophy, and he really liked the idea. Funk is so geographic too, as well as being timeless. You know, Ohio and Dayton has a really distinct funk sound. Obviously, New Orleans, you know, New York, Minneapolis, with the whole kind of Prince sound. Now Colorado is obviously a huge, huge part of that, more and more every day. And so we were talking, we thought we liked the idea of kind of almost merging like the Ohio funk sound, which is where I'm from and where I grew up, you know, playing and with, along with what's happening now in the Denver, Colorado kind of thing. And that's kind of what we got. And it was such an exciting way to do the album. First off, you know, so we flew out to, Color Red has their own studio. It's kind of a studio with the house that you stay in. So we went out there, I think it was a Sunday night. We were there till like that Thursday, so 4 or 5 days. And we wrote and recorded I think five or six songs, in that day from scratch. I mean, I had basic little riffs here and there, but it was really from the beginning. And the way they do it there at Color Red, which is awesome, is first off, you're going to actual tape, not virtual tape, like not digital interpretation of what tape is, but you're straight up Tascam tape, analog tape. And we are recording all in one room, all live, all together. And so you could get 3/4 of the way through the song, someone makes a mistake, you're starting over again. It's, we're not doing punch-ins and all that kind of stuff too as well. And because of that, it just really, that's why I'm so excited about this album. It's it has this different energy that, you know, it's always hard to try to capture what you do live in the studio and vice versa. And this is like, I think we've really done them with this. You know, Eddie was producing it, and you know, he's writing with us, playing on it too as well. And he steered the ship in a really positive way, because, you know, you're always set. You're like, is that good? Was that performance good enough? I wasn't sure, you know, since we're not going back and doing little punch-ins and all that kind of stuff, right, which is so, so common now. He's like, no, just let it ride, you know? And then that's what's great. And then the best part about it is when we started rehearsing these songs to perform them live, it was like, oh, well, all we got to do is play what we did in the studio. You know, it's not like, how do we interpret this live? Because that's always a thing a lot of times with when you get in the studio, you get so crazy in there with what you can do. It's like, you can just do it just like we did on the album. So it's really got a special thing about it. And the getting into, and I don't mean to be on a soapbox too long, so to stop
by
me,
all means.
Stop me if I'm talking too much. So all the way this, all the way that. So technically, like, this is going to be on vinyl. So one side is all the way this, which is the color red side. The other side of the album, which a lot of it actually was recorded right here in Cincinnati, it was in Brooklyn, in Dumbo at a studio, and also in Cincinnati at my studio. But that side, the side I was telling you about before, is produced by Eddie Roberts. The other side was produced by a gentleman by the name of Atal Shore. Atal is probably most famous. Are known for, he won the Grammy for writing Smooth by Santana, him and Rob Thomas.
Oh, okay.
Did.
Wow.
He did a bunch of Maxwell's first album too, co-wrote that, did some stuff with Joy's, like very good songwriter, producer guy, and he actually, him and I grew up together, but he's lived in New York for a really long time. And I sent him a couple of demos of stuff I was working on for this record. He's like, man, you know, it's time. Why don't you come in here and kind of produce this stuff. So his side of the album's got more of a kind of a, you were talking about the future thing. It's got more that side where the color red stuff has kind of a, yeah, what I say a lot of them, like the little catchphrase of the record, I said, when 1972 meets 2072.
Yes, and that's kind of what back to the future.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So you've got some more of a kind of a retro-y kind of elements, and then the other side of the album, very, very futuristic too as well. And so we're kind of bridging that whole thing with this album. Yeah.
And speaking of Eddie, we're recording this, and tonight you'll be at Brooklyn Bowl playing with the new Master Sounds.
Yeah.
And this is the art of the sit-in. What kind of preparation has gone into what's going on tonight?
Well, you know, obviously, Eddie, what we're going to do actually a song off the album, I think.
Oh, terrific.
We're going to do the opening track, which is a song called Knuckle Sandwich, and which is one of my favorite titles ever. It's such a crazy, dirty title. And so I guess Eddie, you know, gave the song to the rest of the guys in the band. I'm gonna head over to Brooklyn Bowl in a little while later on today. We're gonna do a quick little run through and sound check, and then kind of do it like that. But that's more of an outlier in terms of the sit-in side of things. That's more of an outlier, I think, in general when you do that type of thing. It's not, I mean, once in a while they'll be like, hey, let's do this song, let's do this class, you know, like let's do Superstition by Stevie Wonder or whatever the case may be. But generally, at least the sit-ins that I've gotten to have been, I mean, there's always a song, but it's just definitely like the song is a very, very kind of rough structure to what where it's going to lead you to, you know?
Sure.
But let me say on to tonight. So tonight, as far as, yeah, so Eddie, he heard I was going to be here in New York doing some stuff, there's some promo stuff for the new album today, and we were like, oh, wow, you're at Brooklyn Bowl. So it's, he said, well, you know, it's a big weekend for them too, because it's like their 20th year anniversary for New Master Sound. So he said, why don't you come up and then we'll do this. So that's kind of how it all came together. So it was kind of like everything was working in the right direction for us to do this today.
And you will go and practice this before going?
I think so. Okay. At least like in the dressing room. I'm not sure if we're going to do it on stage. Okay. I think they're actually doing a performance. They played last night, and I think they're doing like an all ages thing today.
Okay,
at Brooklyn
Bowl,
a matinee thing, and then we're doing the late show. So I'm not sure if we're going to actually, you know, full fledged set up on stage. You know, it might be me just bringing my bass upstairs in the dressing room at Brooklyn Bowl and banging through that. I'm not really sure yet. I'll find out when I get there, but you know, everybody's great players, so it's going to be it'll be fun. And like I said, Eddie played on that track too as well, so he knows
he's
it from his
certainly
side.
Certainly familiar with
oh,
it.
Oh yeah, yeah. So he'll know, be able to lead everybody through it. So it should be good. Yeah.
Let's take another example. Last summer, you sat in with Humphries McGee on a cover of Prince's Controversy.
Yeah, that was super fun.
Can you talk about how that came together and whether you rehearsed that beforehand?
Oh, sure. We did not rehearse that beforehand. That was definitely what Humphries did with me. So we kind of set up right when the album was starting to. We were kind of wanting to get some kind of pre-promo, you know, hype about the album. You know, kind of put me out there in different situations so people would kind of start buzzing about what was going on before the album actually hit. So we, Angie, who is my manager, she got in touch with Vince from who is Humphries' manager as
right,
well.
Vince Iwinski.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And talked to him and said, you know, through the idea, say we're gonna kind of do like random kind of sit-ins around. Just to kind of put me in different places that other people might have not seen me before. So, and I'm pretty good friends with Ryan too, the bass player. You know,
Ryan Stasek.
He's a big bass, but we actually had a bet a few years ago when the Reds played the Pittsburgh Pirates in the playoffs, who was going to win. And I think it was a bottle of tequila, and unfortunately, he got the bottle of tequila. So yeah, it was a heartbreaker. So I still got to get him back on that, but. But yeah, so another, you know, we talk bass geek stuff, all the us bass players were talking about, what pedal are you using, what amp are you using? So we're kind of in that world. And so between her talking to Vince and me talking to Ryan, we just kind of put it together. I was off that day. Tennessee wasn't too. I was originally actually going to fly down to Austin and do it with them in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
But we said, hey, let's go ahead and do the Tennessee Theater thing. It just kind of worked out better. And so what they did is they sent me over an entire list. Like, I mean, it must have been close to 100 songs, and they're like, you know, maybe pick 3 or 4 of these that you think will work for you. So I kind of went down the list, picked one of them, happened to be Controversy, and they're like, or I think I picked 4, then they chose Controversy. Like, so let's do Controversy, because they hadn't done that a long, long time, I guess, you know, and which was wild when after I did that show with all the Humphries McGee blog people and stuff like that. I mean, they're like, oh yeah, they did this. I mean, those people know like the day, the time,
sure,
and everything that they did that song last. It was pretty neat to see that. It's pretty great. They're such incredible fans. So we did. So I got there a little early. We did do that at soundcheck. So we did one run through and soundcheck. And then, you know, they had me out in the show then. I think we closed. They did 2 sets that night. They didn't have an opener that night. So they had me close the first set with them there. And I just ran through Ryan's stuff. And it was
right. And there
fun.
Was there no Ryan. It was just
right.
Lone
yeah, it wasn't both. But it was, yeah, he just kind of took a little break. And then I kind of jumped up there and did my thing. Yeah.
Do you recall what the other songs you chose were by any chance?
They were all obviously funk type stuff. Oh man, I wish, that's a great question. And I can't, I think another one might have been another Prince one. I think there was a Stevie Wonder, but I can't remember which one it
sure.
was. It might have been, I think one was Thank You by Sly and the Family Stone.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure that was one of them too as well, yeah.
Great, excellent.
But Controversy was neat because it's not, I mean, that's kind of a hit for Prince. It wasn't like a huge, you know, it's not like you're going out there and playing like, you know, Purple Rain or Little Red Corvette or
right.
whatever. It's just kind of, it's not digging super super deep into his catalog, but it's semi there. It wasn't like the major hit, which is what I loved about it. Yeah,
and it was great. I think you added your own flair to it, and certainly with your slap heavy style, it was very unlike any of the other versions that they've played before. And I think that's what you want in a sit in. You want to add your own flair. Am I right in that?
That's totally it. And I think that's why whether. You know, I'm sitting with someone else, or having someone sit in with my group. The that's it. You're trying to bring what you bring to the table. Still want to be within the confines of what they do, of course, but you, but you definitely will, you know, I think people, you know, obviously have you to sit in because they want you to add your flavor to everything right. too as well. And you know, and so it's always like the, when I first started doing, like kind of where I got my feet wet with this was when I did a bunch of those artists at larges at Bear Creek. I did like 3 or 4 years in a row. This is like, you know, 2010 through like 13 or 14 or something like that. And I remember I did the first one. Oh my gosh. I mean, I'll put it out here on this podcast. I was freaking so nervous because, like, you know, I mean, I'd met everybody here and there at festivals and stuff like that, but I mean, you know, Ivan Neville's coming up. Is he gonna come up later on tonight? Yeah, sure, you know. And it's like, these are all, you know, it's George Porter Jr. I mean, all the people we, you know, that now I've gotten to know a lot more, but at that point I was still like this, you know, guy. I was like, people probably heard me a little bit, but I was like, it was like, hey, can I? And it's weird when you're doing the artist at large thing, it's always a little awkward because you're like, hey, I'm the artist at large at this festival. Can I come in and sit in your set? You know,
so and is that how, like, it generally goes? That you would, it's on you to...
It's a kind of two-way street, but it's, I mean, it's ultimately, it is your, you know, you're getting paid to go do that thing. So it's like, right. It ultimately is your responsibility. So you're not just sitting there at the twiddling your thumbs playing at the festival. So you definitely want to have some stuff lined up. One of the artists at large is one of the Bear Creeks, actually, Turquoise, right when they were first starting the tour, I think it was 2011, 2012, they had approached me too about coming to sit in with them. So some bands, once they see you're on the bill, they will say, hey, why don't you come and sit in with us? But then, you know, some of it's a combination of both too as well. So, and it gets, you know, the more and more you do it, it gets easier in terms of you have relationships with these people that you might have not had before, and you don't feel so awkward calling them up or whatever. But those first couple, I mean, it was great. It was like inspiring, and it really helped me as a musician and all kinds of stuff. But it's pretty intimidating when you're on stage with some of those players, you know. So.
Yeah. And you mentioned Turquoise, and I saw a video from 2011 from Bear Creek, and it was really cool how, well, first of all, I mean, the lineup has changed a good bit for them. Sure. And in the case of Controversy, it was you coming in and taking Ryan's spot. But in the when you played with Turquoise, Taylor Shell, the bass player, was holding it down, which really let you play lead bass. Yeah.
That's exactly it, and that was what was great about it, and and that made it super fun. You know, I almost had the, well, when I've done the sit-ins with, I've sat in with Dumpster Funk a couple times, same kind of thing, you know, that Nick will, they'll still stay up there a lot of times, and then I'll just kind of go a little crazy, and there'll be like a foundational thing versus what I'm doing,
Will it ever, when you've played with Dumpster Funk, has it ever been both Nick and Tony on bass, so three bass players?
No, Tony was up there when I sat in with him, but the...
But he was playing guitar.
Guitar, and okay. I think he was singing lead on. We did "Fight the Power" by the Isley Brothers, another Cincinnati band, by the way. A lot of people don't know that actually the Isleys are from Ohio too, as well, Kennedy Heights specifically. But he's usually playing guitar. And actually, I think the time I sat in with them, that a little video went around on it. I was actually using, because I didn't know I was going. I was just going to the show, and Ivan came out in the audience. I'd already, you know, played with him at Bear Creek and some other festivals and stuff at that point. But he came out and he's like, "You coming in tonight?" And I'm like, "I don't have my bass." And he's like, I play 4-string. I don't play 5-string. So he's like, "Well, come and play Tony." And Tony's a 5-string guy. I'm like, "Well, I'm just going to go for it." And it was super fun. It worked out great.
Excellent. And bringing it back to Turquoise, you've been doing a lot of shows with Sammy Garrett recently. How did that relationship develop?
Partially from the sit-ins. You know, we knew each other a little bit from playing a lot of the same clubs and festivals. We'd kind of chit-chat here and there. But I had said it, like, Turquoise had come through Cincinnati a couple times, and they played at the Madison Theater, which is in Covington, which is, Cincinnati is kind of a twin city kind of thing. And there's right in the river, there's Kentucky and Cincinnati. It's like the same media market, same and stuff. So anyway, they were over there, and so they asked me if I wanted to come sit in. So, you know, when you get there, it's not like you just walk in straight onto the stage. You sit there and you hang out with everybody for a little bit. And that's part of it too, about, you know, about the art of the sit-in. It's the music thing's obviously the main thing, but also it's also getting a chance to meet these people and talk and hang out and stuff like that. And that's what, you know, I did, and Sammy and I kind of started talking. And when we were working on some of this new material, specifically the stuff with Atal I was telling you about, we were like, oh, it'd be really great to have like female vocals on some of this stuff. It just calls for it. And so I just kind of randomly sent her I sent her like an instant message on one of the social, like Instagram or something like that.
Sure.
And then I was like, I'm not sure if this is something you're into, yada yada. And and she got back, and then we just started recording together, and then it just kind of clicked, you know. So like, it worked out great with her. She's kind of a superhero, not like I am. So it was a good relationship there. Yeah.
And about live shows, she's played with you a number of live shows. How will you prep her for what to play at those shows?
Well, we usually always try to get, you know, if possible, like we're getting ready to do a run coming up here, kind of like our album release parties through different parts of the Midwest for about a week. And she is, we'll get her flyer in a day early. So we'll do like a day of rehearsals, you know, and so that's what the plan is. This one is we just try to like fill her plate as much as we can while here, and, you know, do any kind of film. We got some video stuff we're going to do with her too as well. But yeah, we'll do a, you know, a good day long rehearsal. So we'll rehearse. And that's the thing I will say, you know, I mentioned earlier on the podcast about the album and how like the translation to live is so much easier in a way, because that's the way we recorded it.
Right.
At the same time, when you're interpreting songs, it gives you leeway, not that you want to do this, but like if it's not, the interpretation is not exact and you play something a little different, people don't know necessarily. But when we're doing it like the way it on the rehearsal thing, it becomes a lot more paramount, because like little hits and all that kind of stuff. So you almost have to take that James Brown approach. So we just can't like, hey, here are the changes, let's get up there and let's go for it. You actually have to, you know, work through them, which is cool, which is great. You know, it makes the band tighter. It's always a good thing. But yeah, getting with Sammy, that's what we do with that with her. Yeah.
And you are going to get to live out a dream with Sammy this summer. You were telling me earlier, can you tell our readers about what's going to be going on?
Yeah, this is like total bucket list thing for me. I'm a fanatical baseball fan, have been since I've been a kid. Cincinnati Reds fan specific, all of baseball, but Cincinnati Reds specifically, obviously being from Cincinnati. So the Cincinnati Reds asked both Sammy and I to do the national anthem. We're doing it on, I think it's August 5th. I believe it's Monday, August 5th. And we're going to be down at Great American Ballpark where the Cincinnati Reds play. We're going to be doing this kind of just bass and vocals, a interpretation of the national anthem. So I'm pretty excited about it. Yeah.
I can only imagine how excited you must
that. It's pretty cool. They asked me a couple years ago. I got to throw out the first pitch at a game too, where I'm going to do that Reds fan song too as well. So, and phew, you were talking about being nervous on that one. Oh my gosh, it's crazy.
You get it over the plate?
I did over the plate. All right. Well, here's the thing. This is a quick little anecdotal story here real quick. So, you know, from home plate to first base, as you know, is 90 feet, right? And then pitcher's mound to home plate is 60 feet, right? So it hit me so, like, I was so nervous about the whole thing. I in my head, I got 90 feet in my head. Like, so I was practicing at 90 feet. So I got it. Thank goodness I had a good catcher. My whole time I'm like, I'm not bouncing this. So I got it way over the plate. It was a little high, but I got it. It went center, but it was just a little high over the plate too as well. So I made it over the plate. And I know why people mess up on it so much now. You're so nervous when you're out there. I mean, I've been playing on stage since I'm a kid. I get stage fright a little bit, but nothing that big. When you're down there, it's like, on that field, it's like something you never experienced.
Whole different ball game, if you will.
Exactly. And you're gripping the ball, because of being nervous, you're gripping the ball so tight. So a lot of times when you do your follow through, a lot of times what I think people are doing is they're letting it, I know you can't see this because it's a podcast, but they're letting it go too late. So when you're almost kind of coming around, so that's why the angle is all off and stuff like that, just being nervous. So I get it, you know. So, but yeah, it was a pretty cool thing too as well. But this is going to be really cool. We've rehearsed it a few times. The Reds actually had Sammy and I do kind of we did like a little video of us doing it together. So it's kind of see how it was. Cool. So maybe we've got it on you. We've got it in a little private thing on YouTube. Maybe we'll release that sometime after the game. But yeah, it was pretty neat.
Earlier, you mentioned playing with Joe Marsnak,
yep.
And one thing that I was looking at videos, I saw that you played, I know Steve Mollett was in the band,
yep.
We're doing Fish's Sand, uh-huh. And it's really interesting to me because that's such a, the original bass line from the way that when Trey played it with his trio with Tony Markellis, it is just so in the pocket, the same notes over and over again, kind of like a metronome.
Yeah.
And you took just a completely different approach to it. And it was so cool as a huge Fish fan to hear that. And I almost didn't think it was possible.
Uh-huh.
And I just wonder how much experience, how much preparation you had in a situation like that, learning that song.
Well, Joe does the same. I mean, Joe will send us over like, you know, an actual, like a Dropbox thing with all the songs he's going to do, both his own original songs and by other groups too as well. So, you know, there was definitely some thought put into everything that I was doing. But at the same time, like we were mentioning earlier, I know that he's hiring me to kind of do my thing with it too as well. So again, it's a little bit always like that little kind of, you know, tightrope act where it's like you want to be honest to the original line and the original song and not take away from the song, but then try to enhance it in your way to sound like that too as well. So hopefully that's really nice what you say about that. And it was, and it's weird. It's even stranger for me on songs like by Fish because I've gotten Mike Gordon and I are pretty good friends, you know, and so it's always a hoot to like. I'll text him on the road and I'm like, look what song I'm playing right now too. I teach bass lessons when I'm not on the road, and it's funny because one of my students was a huge Fish fan, and I can't remember what song it was now, but he's like, I don't understand how he's doing this. So it was neat. I texted Mike and I was like, how are you doing this? So I put him on the little speakerphone and he actually told the kid how
that must have made
his. He was geeking out. It was great. It was really cool. And it was cool. And that kid will be a musician for the rest of his life now, probably because of that too. Yeah.
And do you recall in a situation like that when Joe shared this Dropbox with you, was it the studio version of Sand or was it Joe's version? Do you recall how covers work when you...
I think with Sand, I think it might have been like a YouTube link of a live version.
Got it.
I'm 99% sure of that song, that's what it was.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. I can almost say for sure that's what it was. Yeah. So I just took it from that too as well. Yeah.
Well, if we can end with a sit-in story, whether it's you sitting in with somebody or somebody sitting in with your band, is there something you could think of from the past, just whether it's good, bad, or otherwise humorous, is there just a sit-in story that you could share with our readers?
I think probably the one that kind of is interesting is one that I didn't know I was going to be sitting in. And that is, I went to see Bootsy was performing in Cleveland, Ohio a couple years back when he was still touring. I think it was like 2014 or 15 maybe.
Okay, so this was long after you had played with him tons of times.
You have a long time
relationship with Bootsy.
Big time. Yeah, right. And I knew not just him, I knew Bernie was playing. I mean, almost everybody in the band I knew pretty well,
right.
You know, from his whole orbit. So he just said, well, why don't you just come up to the show? I was just coming up to the show to hang out. You know, it wasn't like I was there to, you know, I was just there. So I was like kind of on the side of the stage. And it was at the Beachland Ballroom for a lot of people know that venue.
Great and that's
venue.
In Cleveland?
That's in Cleveland, right. Ohio. Great, great venue. And so he just kind of like towards the end of the set, he started to kind of, there's a song he does called Touch where he would go into the audience and it's just like this one groove, just over and over and over again. And so he's like kind of waves me out to come out on stage. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, a bunch of people are there on stage clapping, you know, kind of thing. So I'm standing back by the drums, back by Blackbird McKnight, who was playing guitar with him at the time. From you
former
know,
P-Funk.
Yeah, Red Hot Chili Peppers time. For a little short time too as well. Plays with DJ Logic all the time, you know, okay. too as well, who is a good friend of mine too as well. And Blackbird looks over at me and grabs his, this is not bass, grabs his guitar, hands it to me. And all of a sudden, next thing I know, I've got Blackbird's guitar on, and I can play pretty good rhythm guitar, so it was fun, it was cool, but it was like not at all was I. So that sit in, so and that went on for a good 15, 20 minutes, and I'm sitting here just like rocking the house, playing not bass, but playing rhythm guitar with all of Bootsy's original Rubber Band. That one, and then another Bootsy story. This is another great Bootsy story. So in 2009, Bootsy did this tour. It was not long after James Brown had passed.
Okay,
and the James Brown, like kind of like the James Brown tribute tour, and basically he got all the original JBs together, you know, obviously minus James, and did kind of went out and did a tribute. And Bootsy himself hadn't been on the road a lot himself at that point, so like he even had Catfish, his brother, out with them. So Bootsy was he's like, I'm just here to be a bass player, like I was in James Brown's band. And they had this guy named Tony Wilson who does like a James Brown tribute thing, who's like incredible. He was the one kind of fronting it. And so okay. they had all the original JBs as well back there. And so towards the end of the night, as we were doing a few shows, we were, I believe, in Minneapolis. He said, people were like, you know, wanted Bootsy to come out and be Bootsy a little bit, you know, not just hang in the back of the bass player. So he kind of started going out. The first night it was at the Minneapolis Zoo. He got out, and he wanted to go out in the audience to kind of meet and greet people and stuff like that. So he kind of saw me stand on the side of the stage, gave me one of these come over here type things. Next thing I know, he handed me his bass. I'm sitting here playing with all the original JBs, you know.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Heroes of mine. Scared to death, you know. They knew who I was, but that like they were still kind of like, is this guy going to do okay here? And thank goodness everything went great. It was incredible. And then we started kind of doing that like for the next few shows. Then after that, where I would come out at the end and play bass with them too as well.
Oh, that's
so
terrific.
So those two stories there, both Bootsy related, which you know Bootsy's been such a huge part of my career, and those are probably the ones that really stick out the most. Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you so much for your time again. All the Way This, All the Way That is out on Color Red Records. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And yeah, this is a great podcast. Like all musicians, I'm sure, will tell you that podcasts are our lifeblood when we're on the road. And we're so glad that you guys have this one going too as well.
Thanks.
Are you ready? Are you ready for the funk show?
And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Jam Bass Podcast, which was sponsored by SiriusXM. Learn more about SiriusXM by visiting SiriusXM.com/Jambass. As the Osiris Podcast Network's media partner, you can find and listen to all of the podcasts in the Osiris Network over at Jambass. We appreciate you listening to this podcast and for supporting Osiris. We always want to improve and want your input to be able to give you more podcasts and experiences that you love. So we're doing a listener survey. When you complete the survey, you can enter to win an amazing limited edition original Osiris poster. We'll be selecting three winners at random. Go to surveymonkey.com/r/jambass to take the survey today. Thanks to Anders and Paul for chatting with me, and thanks to Freakbass for talking with Scotty B. Telefunken supplies these great sounding microphones, and Jake Alexander puts it all together. Thanks again to all of you out there for listening. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Jam Bass Podcast. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, go see live music.